But part of it is sort of the warm-up, the beginning of Shikantaza meditation, sitting. And also some idea of why we're sitting and what it is. So some dealing with the ideals of as they are known to us but not known to us, not graspable and not touchable, but still there, maybe in some sense. In some sense they are, in some sense they're not. But the warm-up, the beginning, was advocated in a series of papers, Taisho's talks by Maizumi Roshi, that were published shortly after his death, and you can find them by searching on Maizumi and Taisho's on the internet. And basically what he said was that perhaps when you first sit down, take about 15 minutes and actually warm up to Shikantaza slowly and systematically. Do this in the sequence of body, breath, and mind. That was the sequence that Dogen essentially took in all of his teachings. Dogen being a 12th century master, who I have some things that I want to read from him later. The body is this bit of trying to be upright, sitting as straight as you can and sitting as balanced as you can, with the spine essentially thinking of a cord or a golden cord that extends through your spine and up to the heavens and down to the earth, to the bottom of the earth, the middle of the earth. And with your back arched slightly in, and for me, trying to also put a little arch into the upper back, because I come with a sort of concave upper spine, and chin back a little bit, and trying to really straighten. The idea of returning to that posture whenever you're disturbed from it. The breath starts with sensations at the tip of the nose generally, because that's the easiest way to get in contact with your breath and to make it part of you. If you follow your breath in the entire body, at least according to Maizumi, you'll get lost. So you can't really grasp that at one. But starting with the breath at the tip, I also advocate thinking sort of sutras for breathing awareness, particularly the sutra for full awareness of breathing, and particularly it has four groups of four lines each, tetras, I think they call them. But the first line is just awareness, breathing in, awareness of the body, breathing out, calming the body. The second is awareness of the feelings, whatever is arising in terms of emotions. Identifying joy and happiness in the feelings. There's always some joy present, and usually in my practice, I'm happy to say that it's increasing. You know, it's just natural, it flows. Happiness also. Sort of the dissolution of the joy is happiness. Then calming the feelings also with the out-breath. The third one is the mind, which gets more interesting, more tricky. And that says basically becoming aware of the mind and the in-breath. Making the mind happy on the out-breath, a smile. Angie actually advocates putting a half smile on your face during Zazen. Then focusing your mind. Vihara is the lower portion of your abdomen where your mudra sort of centers, is one frequently advocated place to concentrate your mind. But then on the out-breath, liberate your mind. So you may want to go back and forth in that. But the final tetra is most interesting because it starts with impermanence, seeing things change, dissolution, letting things dissolve, emotions, feelings, etc. Cessations, particularly of desires or, you know, I want to get out of here, it's time. Letting go of your immediate discomfort. And finally, letting go. Did I do those correctly? Cessation and letting go are the third and the fourth of the desires. And that sutra leads to another sutra, which is the four foundations of mindfulness. And they're just awareness of the body in the body. So sort of being aware within the body itself, an awareness of the feelings within the feelings, awareness of the mind within the mind, and the awareness of the mind with objects, whatever is around you and buzzing at you, in this case a fly going by. Letting that awareness be outside you. Mike talked about a four mindfulnesses of driving last time, somewhat analogous. Awarenesses of the road, awareness of the car, awareness of yourself, and awareness of traffic, I think.
Of other drivers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and their moods. But that kind of awareness is important. The four foundations of mindfulness lead in this sutra on to the seven factors of awakening, and I won't go through those except as a key point. Well, they're mindfulness itself and investigation. What's going on? What is this? Who am I? And then energy, joy, ease, concentration, which comes naturally by stopping. And finally, equanimity, being constant, sort of being aware of the sameness. But the sutra ends with an interesting implicit promise. And Buddha was, of course, talking through this to his disciples in a much more extensive and detailed manner. But he said, if you practice any of these factors of awakening, such as mindfulness or investigation of dharmas, regularly and faithfully, it will come to perfection of awakening. And not only it, but all of seven factors of awakening, any one of them can be used and it will come to perfection. It will bring you to awakening. And in that, there's a kind of a clear knowing. And liberation. I can't pretend to all that, but I think the promise, the implicit promise, is well worth keeping in mind. I had two other sutras in mind, and this still is just sort of the beginning of things to think about if you want to think while you're settling down. Those are the Metta Sutra and the Prajnaparamita Sutra, very close to the sutra on boundlessness that we chanted this morning. Metta Sutra starts with, this is what should be accomplished by the one who is wise, don't know, who seeks the good. I want to talk about that a little bit, what that means. and who has obtained peace. Not yet for me. But it goes on, let one be strenuously upright. So straighten your posture in Zazen. And sincere. Now let it be, let all your emotions be in that. Without pride. Sometimes you get proud of your posture. If it's better than it was the day before, it'll be worse the day after, so the pride is extra. Not only that, the sutra doesn't include this, but I think any of the comparative sins of seven deadly sins, the envy, jealousy, avarice, etc., you could say the same thing in the posture, in the practice, that it's extra. That it's, you're carrying something if you have it, so it's good to let it go. Be aware of it and let it go where it came from. Not have it part of the practice. So on the in-breath, straightening. And on the out-breath, maybe the prajna paramita, form is emptiness. What this is this? Is this form? Is it emptiness? How does it feel like? Going on a later portion of it. In emptiness, no form. It's kind of an assertion of boundlessness. And the end of it, Gate, paragate. Koban once translated as falling apart. Falling apart. Everything is falling apart. That feeling on the out-breath of just letting things go, letting things fall apart, even the sense of stopping, and even particularly the sense of identity of somebody who's doing this. This is part of my ego, then I'm just practicing ego. So letting whatever sense you have of that fall apart. Koban said something like, one must disappear in the sitting. It is the only way. He went on to say that when a senior practitioner retains some sense of self, I think the word was pathological. And anyone's free to comment on this, but so I certainly confess to some pathologies, and I think that it's hard to get away from that. And it's almost impossible to conceive of disappearing in sitting, but yet it's part of it. Going a little bit into the mind, in the breath, body, mind, sequence. I happened to attend a workshop given by Gil Fonsdale of the Insight Meditation Center, and also Victoria Austin of the San Francisco Zen Center, on mindfulness. They had three of the mind, mostly. The analogy that Gil offered was like warming wax, so you could work with it. The mind starts like a hard lump, like a solid. It's going its own way. And the breath, with patience and attention, softens the mind in the course of the sitting. Another analogy had it was like a watering hole in a jungle if you're looking for animals. And you can go out and look for the wild animals, or you can go to the watering hole. The mindfulness is the watering hole for the mind. Victoria Austin said it was like trying to tame a cat or to train a cat. So So those of you who have cats will know what that feels like. It's pretty well nigh impossible. In the sitting itself, in the practice of sitting, including the upright posture, there's a line in Suzuki Roshi's book that says something like, if you are dissatisfied with your sitting, then your mind was probably wandering. It's the usual cause. I want to get a little bit to try to approach two very, very difficult topics later. But I noticed in a book that I just happened to read, Dan Leighton wrote a book on bodhisattva archetypes, which includes the female archetypes, of course, but also includes the male archetypes that I considered talking about. But he said of Shikantaza that it was an expression of awakened awareness, clear, non-judgmental, panoramic attention to all the myriad phenomena arising in our present experience. So this is sort of after the warm-up period. My guidelines are sort of the thought of just sitting. But with the Metta Sutra, strenuously upright and sincere, without pride, etc. Wholeheartedly, not being divided. Prajna Paramita comes to mind. Being here now is another part of that. And the last sort of guideline is already complete. Nothing to accomplish in the sitting. Nothing further to attain. Nothing not to make anything happen. Not to stop thinking. Not to worry. So being complete. Being complete is a little bit difficult. The Sesshin we just had a couple of weeks ago had some of its pivotal lines from Dogen, and I could find them in this book if you wanted. But that the entire universe is the Dharma body of the self. The entire universe is the true human body. Very mind-stretching concepts. And we could argue and discuss to what extent, in what sense is this true? And it's really hard to touch on, I think. But it's an approach. Dogen had something that I saw soon after that about awakening. He said, this is just a particular paragraph that I copied, but when Buddha was alive, someone realized the four fruits when he was hit by a ball. Someone else understood the great way by wearing a robe in fun. They were both ignorant people, like beasts. But with the aid of right trust, they were able to be free from delusion. A laywoman serving food to an ignorant old monk who was sitting in silence was enlightened. This did not depend on wisdom, scripture, words, or speech. But it was only brought about by right trust. If you practice with right trust, you obtain the way regardless of being dull or sharp. This is somewhat out of sequence, but it's something also about our practice, which is that it works. And that's something, there are many, many different religions in the world. There are many, many choices of practice. We'll come back to that. I'm just going a different direction entirely, but as long as I have it in front of me. Maizumi, in his quotes in his Taishos that I referred to, that there are aspects of one single Buddhist belief. Buddha's Nirvana Sutra, want little, know how to be satisfied and transcend, avoiding idle talk, is one way of saying this. Own true nature, no ego, no death, causation, Buddha's attraction to the way, not two, not separate, all Buddha way, are the eight. But the one Buddha way is just want little, knowing how to be satisfied and transcend. Also, the no I, but also take care of this good I, was part of that. That is, be concerned and taking care of yourself. Appreciating your life. So, in terms of the ideals, let me see what sequence I have things in my mind, at least. Again, feel free to interrupt or talk. But there's some idea in our society, I think, and it's pretty evident that things are, in many respects, not so good in terms of the corporate competitive ethic and business ethic, in terms even of the national posture of wars, and in terms of that turning now, I think, away from massive wars, such as we're having in the Middle East, but instead toward cyber wars and to targeted killing lists and so on. It's actually happening, I think, but it's not very informed or enlightened. The Platonic ideals that I would suggest, those are, you know, things that Socrates and Plato concerned themselves with, Platonic, Plato, such as good, truth, love, beauty, justice, or source. Religion generally advocates those, all religions do, I think, but they tend to get a little bit lost in promoting their own view or proselytizing. Even our ideas of fairness, of what these are compromised because we see things in self-serving ways, compounded by our distant viewing distant communities and people in stereotypical terms. But without ideals, my interpretation is that people are almost as deluded as children on a playground. They're charming and playful and joyful, but it's not sustainable without some adult. Buddha used the analogy of children in a burning house, something beyond just the playfulness is needed for the future. Now, what I particularly love, one approach to this ideals, is that ideals are all around us and within us. Thich Nhat Hanh particularly said something like, peace is all around us within us, in our bodies, and outside. Touching on peace, we will be healed and transformed. He said, it's not a theory or ideal. Instead, it's a matter of practice. And that's true, I think, for love and for even knowing truth, touching on it through practice and all of the other ideals. You sort of gradually, they come in by osmosis, maybe. So, the Suzuki Roshi, the founder of San Francisco Zen Center, said something like, the truth or source is something beyond our consciousness, something we cannot approach through feeling or thought, or even through our senses. It is the source of all being, including our thoughts, and whatever we can see, touch, smell, taste, or hear. Yet through practice, and he was talking about practice of Zazen, we may realize it. So realizing good becomes clear to me through the process of practicing Zazen. And again, it's by osmosis. It's not that I know truth, but somehow it's present and it's coming. At least my perception of it. It's actually always here and part of each of us and part of everything we do. But awareness of it, realization, you might say, comes from practice of Zazen. I have no idea what time it is, but I want to talk about two more topics before I sort of rest. One is that I went to a workshop on the all-embracing Buddhist ethic. It was given by Roy Bounderson at Zen Center of San Francisco a couple of weeks ago. And I actually went with my son and my wife, who didn't go, but she was there. And then after the morning session, Wes and I came back and talked to her about it, and we were so inspired just by hearing Reb that she turned around and came to the afternoon session as well. And I wrote up my notes on it and sent it to both of them, asking for their comments. My wife said only, gee, you went to a different workshop than I did. So, it was very inspiring. It was clear. What he was saying was that the Buddhist practice is bodhisattva practice for the benefit of all sentient beings. And that his description of it and his details of it, which went on for 4 to 6 hours, was basically the pure precepts, embrace all good being one of them, so back to the ideal. And the paramitas, patience, generosity, precepts themselves, 10 precepts in a sense, and valor or verve, and wisdom, and zazen, or meditation. On the 6 precepts. So he made those somehow alive and living in all of us, and none of us had the words to somehow rationalize where it came from or what it was. But it was a noteworthy and inspiring presentation. The other thing that I wanted to come back to was on the topic of ideals, actualization and realization. Koban gave a version that I'd like to go through briefly of the 4 vows, which was somewhat playful, but his version, the playful version, was sentient beings are infinite. They will save themselves. And I think that goes right along with the father's perception of liberty as what freeing for sentient beings, what is needed, liberation. Desires are infinite. They will find an end of themselves. They take care of themselves eventually if you sit. The Dharma gates are infinite. Therefore, there is learning and study. The Buddha way is not above. It is actualized in every moment. That's what's hard to realize, but still something that is increasingly evident through Zazen, through practice, I think. I wanted to read a poem that I found at the end of this book, which is Dogen's Moon and the Dewdrop, and it's a little bit long, but it comes back to the questions of the guidelines and of realization. And he titles it, or else the translator titles it, The Point of Zazen, after Zen Master Honji, who is incidentally probably the founder of silent sitting practice, silent illumination, that's what he called it. The hub of Buddha's activity, the turning of the ancestor's hub. It moves along with your non-thinking and is completed in the realm of non-merging. As it moves along with your non-thinking, its appearance is immediate. As it is completed in the realm of non-merging, completeness itself is realization. If its appearance is immediate, you have no defilement. When completeness is realization, you stay in neither the general nor the particular. If you have immediacy without defilement, immediacy is dropping away with no obstacles. Realization, neither general nor particular, is effort without desire. Clear water all the way to the bottom. A fish swims like a fish. Vast sky transparent throughout. A bird flies like a bird. Time?
It's about time.
Oh, good. So, I had one final comment in this actualization, what's actually happening. It's beyond our thinking and beyond our touching, according to what Suzuki Roshi has, but somehow we're able to appreciate it. The jewel mirror samadhi line, you are not it, it is you, I think is one that always resonates with me. I had early on the realization, each moment, fresh and new. I really love that. I don't know if there's any validation of it. But Maizumi quotes Dogen as having, the world is recreated, entirety, the universe is recreated, 7 million times in every day. I may have the numbers wrong, but in every second, the world started over again, completely, all by itself. So maybe that's actualization. It ties in with a lot of things that we'll talk about in physics at some point, and mathematics. Thank you, and I'm sorry that there wasn't more discussion.